Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, the minutes are approved. All right, now we're going to have the memorial statements. The first memorial statement is for Steve Kern. Now there's a photo related to this statement in front of the room.
Thank you very much, Chair Plummer. It's been a long time since I've spoken on the floor of the Academic Senate, and it's been a decade. Dr. Stephen H. Schwerner, former chairman of the Queens College Academic Senate, 1972 to 1975, and director of counseling, worked in the counseling office here from 1963 until 1976, passed away at age 88 last month. I knew him quite well during my undergraduate days during the 1970s, as did Dave Fields and many student government and club leaders and members. We sure need counseling of a particular kind, drag counseling, because of the Vietnam War. And Steve was there for us and much more. You see, Steve was a true believer in the importance of students gaining leadership skills and being respected by administrators for their ideals and ideas, while at the same time mentoring them and often helping them get out of jams during difficult times. He and family members, including brother Mickey Schwerner, joined CORE, the National Civil Rights Organization, in the early 1960s. As we all know, Mickey was murdered by the Ku Klux Klan in 1964 June, registering black voters in Mississippi, along with Andrew Goodman, Queens College student, and James Chain. When Steve left Queens, he became dean of students at Antioch College and retained his calling as a civil rights activist and educator, both in and out of the classroom. President Wu presented Steve with the President's Medal at commencement 2 years ago, along with family members of the murdered civil rights workers. His daughter, Cassie, accepted it through the Steve's family health. I have two suggestions. First, with the help of Annie Tomino and her colleagues, an oral history with Steve is available in the Rosenthal Library. It's really worth accessing. Second, I have placed in the front of the room a large photo, which you can see by the easel. Many years ago, when I was a senior vice chancellor at CUNY, I did a voter registration conference, and I found a photo from 1964. It's the boardwalk during the Democratic Convention in August of 64 in Atlantic City. And you can see Dr. King and a rally, and they're holding in the posters the photos of the murdered civil rights workers. And lo and behold, I noticed in the corner of the photo, the far right-hand corner, is Steve Schwerner, the wife of Mickey Schwerner. His name is Rita, and Steve's daughter. And it's just another example of the fact that the chair of the Academic Senate, Steve Schwerner, was a social justice warrior. And I do hope that people will take the time to take a look at the photo before the meeting starts. Thank you very much.
At the time that Steve Schwerner was the head of the Columbus studies the invention of Somalia, and daybreak is near. The poetry collections Fear is a Cow and Diaspora Blues. And most recently, the serialized novel in Somali, Gaso Gamu Gassin. Ali was an eminent scholar of comparative literature. He was one of these people who was such a polyglot, he knew seven languages, he could speak them all. He envisioned the discipline of comparative literature, as he called it, quote, the nerve center of all other disciplines. He was that increasingly rara avis in the contemporary academy, a polyglot thinker across and beyond borders, with an undiminished intellectual curiosity and passion for teaching. We, in the Department of Comparative Literature, were fortunate to work with him. His students admired and respected him for his wisdom and integrity. An esteemed and beloved colleague, he made our department a place of dialogue and intellectual exchange. As a chair, and he served for three terms as chair, he proved himself a respected leader and consummate diplomat. Most of all, as a human being, Ali was frequently sought after by students and colleagues alike for advice and counseling due to his wisdom, fair-mindedness, and insights into the human condition. He was one of Queens College's brightest lights, and his passing is a great loss for us all.
I'd like to ask you all to stand up for a few moments of silence.
lot of changes at the Senate. And today I'd like to just introduce the committee's latest harebrained proposal, which is to make student written course evaluations available to chairs and promotion committees. I don't know if everyone's had a chance to read this proposal, but I just sort of wanted to just give you a quick overview. I know we have a lot of this on the agenda, because this is a change that affects evaluation for every instructor, and I really want to have opportunity for discussion and questions, and for everybody to go back and talk to their colleagues in their departments to see how they feel about this. So as you all know, from having gotten these evaluations, or in the case of the students, having written these evaluations, they have both closed and open-ended questions. The two open-ended questions that we have are: what aspects of the course enhance learning the most? And the second is there anything else you would like to share about the course? Instructors, chairs, and students can see the quantitative results of a closed-ended questions. Questions like, how much do you agree or disagree that you receive regular guidance? How to improve your performance in this course. But under longstanding policy, which I think Dave Fields remembers when this policy went into effect, it was about 15 years ago, or was reaffirmed, only instructors can see students' written responses to open-ended questions. And the committee feels that this deprives chairs of valuable student feedback about a course and an instructor. And this can be positive feedback, not just negative feedback. For example, if an adjunct is frequently praised by students as having made them want to major in the subject, or excited their interest in the subject, or developed their thinking, problem-solving skills, questions that aren't really, there's no room in the closed-ended questions to ask about these kinds of details, even though they're very important. Having this information would provide chairs with very actionable, valuable evidence useful to scheduling and supporting teaching excellence in their departments. Of course, open-ended comments can also reveal problems in a class that may not be so evident in the ratings. Every source of information, whether from students or peer observations, this is why the proposal instructs OIE, that administers, which is the office that administers to evaluations, to instruct chairs, quote, to regard outliers skeptically, giving more credence to comments articulated frequently within and across classes. Withholding a potentially very important source of information about the quality of instruction from department chairs and program directors and personnel and budget committees hampers their ability to improve educational excellence. And I discussed, I brought this up with chairs quite a bit last year when we were doing the revision of the course evaluation instrument, and every chair that I talked to thought that this would be a good idea to have this information available to them. And I think this is also something that would be very welcomed by students. It certainly wasn't the students who were on our committee. It's not really fair to students to embargo this information. Muhammad Al-Dami, I'll just give him a little credit, shout out, he's on that committee. Course evaluation should provide students with a way to anonymously communicate specific feedback about their courses, not just to their instructors, but also to department chairs and program directors. It's unfair and unreasonable to ask them to provide detailed written comments that can be seen only by their instructor. So the committee feels that the potential utility of open-ended course evaluation data justifies making wider and better use of it. As I mentioned, we shouldn't vote today on a policy that's been in place for at least 50 years. And I would just like to ask for your comments and questions, or at least for you to sound out your colleagues about how they feel about this. And perhaps we can have further discussion and hopefully vote at the next time.
without far as you can see. Just a very simple question. Given that the previous policy has been in place for 50 years, can you speak more about what's the rationale for that previous policy? And what's the rationale for your policy?
Well, I wasn't here 50 years ago. Almost. I think it is rooted in a concern that students in an anonymous survey can maybe say things vengefully to get back at their instructor if they got a fourth grade that wouldn't be objective and that might be taken as the sacred truth by anybody who might look at it outside their instructor. So, as I mentioned, there is bias in any source of information about teaching. Whether we look at peer evaluations, there's bias. In the ratings, there can be bias. In the open-ended comments, there can be bias. So all these sources of information have to be judiciously weighed, and there's no guarantee that information will be judiciously weighed, but it's better to have the information than not have the information. Provided chairs are reasonable, and in effect, this really affects adjuncts more than tenure track faculty, because when tenure track faculty come up for promotion, they are generally strongly encouraged to include the full reports that they get, which include that open and those open-ended comments. And they can't be required to, but if the chair of the AP committee can say, look, we want all the evidence that we can provide of the teaching effectiveness and quality, and they will upload that to the board. But for adjuncts, there is no such requirement. For people who are post-promotion, for people like me, there is no such requirement. Now, maybe if I'm tenured or if I have CCE, it's not as actionable as information not as actionable as it would be for an adjunct. But a third of our classes, or maybe more, I don't know, correct me, are taught by adjuncts. And I think we owe it to our students to have really high quality teaching throughout the classes. And this is one way that we can help.
So it will be up to individual chairs and some other consider on that. Thank you.
There's no old business, so we have the new business, which is the calendar of the academics.
Sorry, can I just ask one more question, or?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just curious, as I bring this to my department, in terms of how to frame it, do we know if this motion has been supported or endorsed by YC community? Is the union offering any commentary? In other words, like, could I approach my department saying that this idea has been supported by the union, which would make very certain wage, versus the union having the benefits of the power?
That's really an excellent question. I haven't consulted the union, and I will try to do that before the next meeting, but I won't be able to report on that. And I can report on that before the vote.
Thank you.
All right. The next item on the agenda is the calendar of the academic senate. Are there any objections? Alright, the calendar is approved. And now we have a talk being given to us on the academic review initiative by our provost, Provost Price. So, welcome, Provost Price.
I just
typically considered to be small. And I want you to note here that smallness in and of itself is not problematic. We are a liberal arts and sciences institution. That is our history, that is our DNA, that is what we do well. I am extremely supportive of this. And being small is a facet of an institution like ours. We tend to have a mix in liberal arts and sciences institutions of small programs and relatively large programs, so the balance works out in the end. But we do have some small programs, and you'll know because you sat on committees here in the Senate, that we have deregistered a handful, six, I believe, of zero enrolled programs over the last year. Those have been deregistered with the state. It is part of a push by our Board of Trustees, which is at the CUNY level, to remove programs that have no students in them. So that's not just at Queens College, that's across the state. I'm engaged in a lot of work with the central office. I meet with them on a monthly basis with the budget office and with academic affairs. And they are focused on expense control. So those of you who are chairs or program directors know that we are undergoing a lot of scrutiny of our course scheduling process. The reality is that our core business is teaching and learning. Our staffing is the biggest chunk of our budget. 96% of our budget is salaries. So our schedule drives our salaries and that drives our budget. So there's a lot of scrutiny on our scheduling and how we're using the assigned time. So you should know that that kind of work is underway and has been for the past year. I will say that we are not going to cut our way out of our enrollment declines. That is not going to solve our problems. We are already very lean in terms of staffing and discretionary funds use. So while that is an activity that's going on, us in the graphic displayed here as second from the bottom, which means we have a lot of registered programs here at Queen's College. Again, this is a beautiful thing in terms of choice. And it does reflect a really rich history here at Queen's College, but that's a lot of inventory to maintain. People need to be teaching in these programs, and so when I hear, oh, it doesn't cost anything to offer an additional program, why don't we just launch another program? It does. It costs the effort. write the curriculum, figure out your identity, figure out your name, and it's going to be hard work, but you're going to be part of a big department, and you're going to move to the International Studies Building, and you guys are going to be able to hire people, and there's a lot of interest in this. So that's going to be a tough road, but the future looks bright here. You can continue to live along as a rock department and try to turn it around as geographers. So that means you've got a choice. You can either consolidate or figure it out. And if you
One small thing I'd like to add to this, again, I don't put a lot of time on really thinking and careful thinking into this. Like, we also see from the sort of like data that we're looking at and the conversations we've had, we're also seeing not just things at the level of individual programs, but also things that are across the system more broadly, and that's like giving a really useful insight that I think will not be easily able to sort of access. So sometimes we hear student departments certain things that are very